Katie Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Stand up as a Marine and stand up for America! No one wants to fight for Israel!
As the U.S. and Israeli war in Iran enters its 12th day, we'll speak to a former Marine who was arrested and had his arm broken while protesting the war during a Senate hearing. We'll also look at how the Pentagon, under Pete Hegseth, has slashed teams meant to limit civilian casualties. Iran now says the U.S. and Israel have hit 10,000 civilian sites, killing over 1,300 civilians. Then to the killers of Roe.
The history of abortion rights in this country is a 50-year history of women dying preventable deaths at the behest of men who in many cases believe they had a direct line to God. It's a pretty tough history to stomach. And so the murder mystery theme started out as a way for me to entice myself to tell a really difficult and serious story with some moments of levity and escapism.
We'll speak to Amy Littlefield, author of the new book, Killers of Roe, My Investigation into the Mysterious Death of Abortion Rights. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The U.S.-Israeli war in Iran has entered its 12th day. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth announced that Tuesday was the most intense day of U.S. strikes on Iran. Iranian authorities say U.S. and Israeli forces have bombed nearly 10,000 civilian sites in the country and killed more than 1,300 civilians since the war began. This morning, Iran says it targeted Israel's military intelligence agency, a naval base in Haifa, and an Israeli radar system. Meanwhile, the Pentagon says Iranian strikes across the region has so far injured 140 U.S. service members, killing 7 U.S. troops. Another one has also died. This is White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt.
What is your current timeline for how long the war will last?
So, look, as you know, Steve, the president and the U.S. military's initial timeline was about 4 to 6 weeks to achieve the full objectives of Operation Epic Fury. Again, to destroy their missiles and their ability to make them, destroy their navy, permanently deny them nuclear weapons forever, and to, of course, weaken their evil terrorist proxies in the region.
The Pentagon reportedly spent $5.6 billion worth of munitions during the first 2 days of striking Iran, according to a cost estimate shared with Congress. The Trump administration is expected to send Congress a supplemental military budget request this week. It comes as the Trump administration is reportedly considering deploying special forces into Iran to secure its stockpile of highly enriched uranium. This is Democratic Senator Richard Blumenthal.
I guess I am most concerned about the threat to American lives of potentially deploying our sons and daughters on the ground in Iran. We seem to be on a path toward deploying American troops on the ground in Iran to accomplish any of the potential objectives here.
Meanwhile, a New York Times analysis of missile fragments from the site of the bombing of the girls' school in Manav in southern Iran on February 28th resemble the markings of a U.S.-made cruise missile. It adds to the mounting evidence that U.S. forces struck the girls' primary school. It comes as Iran's foreign minister, Abbas Araghchi, dismissed the Trump administration's claims Iran was planning a preemptive strike against the U.S. as a sheer and utter lie, unquote. On X, Iraqi wrote, quote, "The sole purpose of that lie is to justify Operation Epic Mistake, a misadventure engineered by Israel and paid for by ordinary Americans," he wrote. This is Iran's ambassador to the UN, Amir Sayed Erevani.
Their intention is clear: to terrorize civilians, massacre innocent people, and cause maximum destruction and suffering. The world is witnessing how a rogue and irresponsible state, together with an illegitimate regime, is targeting the Iranian schools, hospitals, residential building infrastructure, sports hall, and relief facilities. These attacks have already claimed the lives of hundreds of innocent civilians, including women and children.
Israel continues its attacks on Lebanon, with the war expanding to central Beirut. An Israeli strike on a Ramada hotel killed at least four people. Israel claimed it was targeting commanders with Iran's Revolutionary Guard Corps. According to the Lebanese government, Israeli strikes have killed 570 people in Lebanon, including over 80 children, while 750,000 people have been forced to flee their homes there. This is Basma Ramadan, who witnessed an Israeli strike on a building near her.
We were sleeping. At around 5:30 a.m., I was asleep with my husband. My son was still awake after coming back from work. The sound was indescribable. The fear is indescribable. Enough is enough. Enough. This is a nightmare. When will it end? We really can't endure it anymore.
Iran continued to fire retaliatory missiles and drones at targets across the Gulf region. Saudi Arabia says it destroyed five Iranian drones heading toward the kingdom's Sheba oil field. Kuwait said it downed eight drones off the coast of the United Arab Emirates in the Strait of Hormuz. A projectile hit a container ship. The Dubai government says that air defenses intercepted two drones near Dubai airport, injuring four people. In Iraq, a drone hit a major U.S. diplomatic facility next to the Baghdad airport. CNN's reporting Iran has laid a few dozen mines in the Strait of Hormuz and has the capability to place hundreds more. The U.S. military said it attacked and destroyed 16 Iranian mine-laying vessels near the strait. Since the beginning of the war, international tankers have largely avoided the Strait of Hormuz, and shipping traffic has considerably slowed. The U.S.-Israeli war in Iran has caused oil prices to surge from less than $70 a barrel on February 27th, a day before the war, to a peak of nearly $120 a barrel by Monday. Prices have now settled to about $90 a barrel. According to AAA, the average price of U.S. gasoline has shot up to $3.48 a gallon from just under $3 a week ago. The Iran war is also driving up the cost of fertilizers such as urea, ammonia, and other nitrogen products that are critical for food production. The American Farm Bureau Federation sent a letter to the White House saying, quote, "We are deeply concerned that failure to act could lead to disruptions to the food supply chain not seen since 2022 when food price inflation reached 40-year highs," unquote. Reuters reports U.S. oil companies Chevron and Shell are close to finalizing a deal that would become the first major oil production agreement with Venezuela since the U.S. abducted the former president Nicolas Maduro and his wife Celia Flores. Just weeks after Venezuela's interim leader Delcy Rodriguez signed a law that opened Venezuela's oil industry to privatization, reversing a key principle of the Chavista movement. I've persevered in Venezuela for more than two decades. The artificial intelligence company Anthropic is suing the Trump administration after the Pentagon designated Anthropic as a supply chain risk, unquote. That's after Anthropic refused to lift restrictions on its AI tool Claude, prohibiting the military from using it for autonomous weapons or domestic surveillance. It comes amidst reports that the Pentagon relied on Anthropic's Claude tool to strike 1,000 targets in the first 24 hours of its attack on Iran. The Pentagon had also reportedly used Claude and the abduction of Venezuela's former president, Nicolas Maduro, and his wife. Meanwhile, a senior member of OpenAI's robotics team has resigned over the company's new partnership with the Pentagon. Caitlin Kalinowski said she was stepping down on principle after OpenAI agreed to make its AI systems available inside the Pentagon. A whistleblower complaint alleges a former worker with the so-called Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, accessed two restricted databases and planned to share the highly sensitive information with a private employer. That's according to The Washington Post, which reported the Social Security Administration's internal watchdog is now investigating the complaint. If the allegations are confirmed, it would constitute an unprecedented breach of security protocols at the agency. The two databases included the records of over 500 million people in the United States, living and dead. The former DOGE employee reportedly copied the data onto a personal thumb drive. This adds to the mounting reported violations of Elon Musk's DOGE as it slashed funding for federal agencies. Alabama's governor has commuted the death sentence of Charles Sonny Burton, a 75-year-old African-American man who spent three decades on death row for a killing he did not commit. Burton was convicted for the 1991 fatal shooting of Doug Battle during a store robbery. Burton participated in the robbery, but had already left when the person he was with shot and killed Battle. Republican Governor Kay Ivey's decision came 2 days before Burton was scheduled to be executed using nitrogen gas. The daughter of the victim, Tori Battle, had joined calls to commute Burton's death sentence, writing in an op-ed for the Montgomery Advisor, quote, "My love for my father does not require another death, especially one that defies reason," unquote. Burton uses a wheelchair due to his painful arthritis. He will now serve a life sentence without parole. Governor Ivey has presided over at least 25 executions in Alabama. Staff members at Columbia University and New York Presbyterian Hospital were discouraged from reporting abuse committed by convicted gynecologist Dr. Robert Haddon, who sexually assaulted hundreds of women over the span of more than 20 years while employed at both institutions. That's according to a new independent report, which blames the systemic abuses on Columbia's culture of silence as the university protected Dr. Haddon even after he was accused of assaulting a patient in 2012 and arrested. The external investigation says Haddon used his prestigious position to prey on women. Haddon was sentenced to 20 years in prison in 2023. A statement from the survivors of Haddon's abuse said, quote, "Survivors and the public at large have spent more than a decade rightfully demanding the truth about what happened at Columbia. We are still waiting," they said. To see our extensive coverage of this case and interviews with many survivors, go to our website at democracynow.org. The Justice Department has reached a major settlement with Live Nation, the parent company of Ticketmaster, avoiding a breakup of the world's largest live entertainment company. The Justice Department had accused Live Nation of operating an illegal monopoly on the concert business. According to the terms of the settlement, Live Nation agreed to change how it makes ticketing deals with venues and would also pay up to $280 million in damages. Dozens of states have vowed to continue legal action against Live Nation. New York Attorney General Letitia James said, quote, "We will keep fighting this case without the federal government so that we can secure justice for all those harmed by Live Nation's monopoly," unquote. In Oregon, a federal judge is continuing to restrict federal agents from using tear gas on protests outside an ICE building in Portland. The preliminary injunction comes as part of a lawsuit filed by the ACLU and testimony by several protesters, including a married couple in their 80s and freelance journalists who describe having chemical or projectile munitions used against them. Video footage cited in court reportedly showed masked DHS officers discharging tear gas and firing pepper ball munitions into crowds of peaceful protesters. U.S. District Judge Michael Simon described the aggressive tactics on nonviolent demonstrators as objectively chilling. And Chilean LGBTQ and women's rights activists are gearing up for the inauguration of José Antonio Kast today, the most right-wing president elected in Chile since the U.S.-backed Pinochet military dictatorship. Kast advocates for a total abortion ban in Chile and, as a congressman, voted against the right to a divorce in 2004. Kast is an unapologetic supporter of Pinochet, whose father was a member of the Nazi Party. Kast's party has announced plans to repeal Chile's current abortion law, which allows the procedure in cases of rape. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Iran's accused the U.S. and Israel of killing more than 1,300 civilians and striking over 10,000 civilian sites during the first 12 days of the war. U.S. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth described Tuesday as the most intense day of U.S. attacks in Iran to date. Israel's also escalating its attacks on Lebanon, killing at least 19 people today, bringing the total to at least 570 since the war began. Nearly 800,000 people have been displaced in Lebanon. Earlier today, Israel struck a high-rise apartment building in central Beirut. Meanwhile, Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps said it launched overnight its most intense and heaviest operation targeting Israel as well as U.S. allies in the Gulf. The New York Times reports Iranian strikes over the past 12 days have damaged at least 17 U.S. sites so far, including military bases and key air defense infrastructure. On Tuesday, a drone attack hit a major U.S. diplomatic compound in Baghdad, Iraq. The Pentagon's also revealed 140 U.S. troops have been injured, in addition to the 7 U.S. service members killed. Another service member has also died. On Tuesday, Democratic Senator Richard Blumenthal spoke to reporters after receiving a classified briefing on the war.
I emerged from this briefing as dissatisfied and angry, frankly, as I have from any past briefing in my 15 years in the Senate. I am left with more questions than answers, especially about the cost of the war. My questions have been unanswered, and I will demand answers because the American people deserve to know. And I guess I am most concerned about the threat to American lives of potentially deploying our sons and daughters on the ground in Iran. We seem to be on a path toward deploying American troops on the ground in Iran to accomplish any of the potential objectives here.
We begin today's show with Akbar Shahid Ahmed, senior diplomatic correspondent for HuffPost. His recent piece is headlined, Israel's Applying Gaza Logic to Lebanon with Trump's Blessing. He's also reported on how the Pentagon, under Pete Hegseth, has slashed teams meant to limit civilian casualties. His upcoming book, titled Crossing the Red Line, Biden, His Advisors, and Israel's War in Gaza. Akbar, thanks so much for being with us again. I want to start off with this piece you wrote, Before Trump Bombed Iran, Pentagon Slash Teams Meant to Limit Civilian Casualties. Explain.
Absolutely, Amy. There's been a real effort in the U.S. government through the kind of post-9/11 moment, through the catastrophes in Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, Syria, to try to learn some lessons from that experience, to think, why does the U.S. end up in these situations where it has these huge strategic goals, it says it's going to remake the Middle East, promote democracy, promote stability, and instead you see continued chaos and often backlash. And a big focus of that has been, how do we make the U.S. less damaging towards civilians? How do we try to uphold international law and also reduce the impression that the U.S. is cavalier about the lives of those abroad? That's been a bipartisan effort. It actually continued even through Trump 1. into the Biden administration, which made several steps. It set up teams within the Pentagon, within combatant commands, at low levels that were doing things like red teaming, which is assessing whether a strike is proportionate, or having investigations of U.S. military operations and actually publishing reports about how many civilians were killed. Pete Hegseth comes into office January 2025, and you see the Trump administration systematically start to destroy that. So what my sources have told me within the military and sort of close to those discussions is that they are deeply worried. We're now in the biggest war since that entire machinery has been taken away. What I mean by that is people who were tracking civilian casualties have been reassigned to other jobs. People, conversations that might have happened about should we do this, or what could this result in for us in terms of international law or war crimes under U.S. law, those aren't happening. And that puts civilians abroad at much greater risk. It also puts U.S. service members at risk of being implicated in possible war crimes. And the narrative from the Trump administration combined with this is really alarming for people, because you have Secretary Hegseth out there saying things like, we have, quote, no stupid rules of engagement.
Let's go to Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth speaking last week.
B-2s, B-52s, B-1s, Predator drones, fighters, controlling the skies, picking targets. Death and destruction from the sky all day long. We're playing for keeps. Our warfighters have maximum authorities granted personally by the president and yours truly. Our rules of engagement are bold, precise, and designed to unleash American power, not shackle it. This was never meant to be a fair fight, and it is not a fair fight. We are punching them while they're down, which is exactly how it should be.
Talk more about what he is saying, Pete Hegseth, Defense Secretary, who President Trump calls War Secretary.
This kind of language, Amy, of maximum authorities, of it's not a fair fight, this is language that's pointing to concerns about proportionality. Is this a fight that's being taken into account of what the collateral damage might be? Are those attacks actually in line with international law? And it's important to remember that we've actually seen within the last couple of years the International Criminal Court issue its first arrest warrants for leaders aligned with the U.S., for Benjamin Netanyahu and Yoav Gallant, often citing the statements of those leaders themselves. So the worry for a lot of experts and even some people within and close to government is, if you're out here saying, we're not playing fair, we're not following any rules, what does that both send internally as a message to the people launching these strikes? And what does that mean for your legal liability? It's the International Criminal Court. There's also many countries that pursue what's called universal jurisdiction. If you violate international law to a serious degree, we will prosecute you. So this raises the specter of U.S. officials or service members down the line facing prosecutions and investigations. And it's not a defense under international law to say, I was following orders from the president or from Pete Hegseth. Pete Hegseth is out here saying, by the authorities vested in me. That doesn't provide a defense for someone who's been involved in an unlawful strike. And I just add two more important data points here. One is, of course, the boat strikes the Trump administration has also been pursuing in the Pacific, in the waters around Venezuela as well. Those have been also apparently violating international law, right? Those have been attacking shipwreck survivors. Those have killed more than 100 people on really vague charges. And so there's a pattern that's been set of these potentially illegal strikes by service members. And then, Amy, coming back to my reporting, I actually reported at the end of last year that a lot of the experts on international law, the laws of war, international humanitarian law, have quietly been leaving the Trump administration. These aren't people who necessarily have been fired, but they've gotten the sense that they're either no longer wanted, or if they give their frank legal advice, they will be retaliated against. So those guardrails inside the government for how the U.S. operates, those have crumbled really rapidly.
And you have also pointed out that, let's see if I can find the CENTCOM quote of the chief saying that it's going to lead to more casualties. CENTCOM chief Brad Cooper saying harm to civilians by U.S. forces risks our credibility and trust and puts our troops at risk.
it puts, you know, the U.S. in a position, and it's striking to see this after the Gaza war and the huge accusations of war crimes potentially implicating the U.S. and certainly implicating Israel. It puts the U.S. in this position that many military and intelligence professionals have not wanted to be. They don't want to be associated with attacks like the school strike in Minab, Iran. They don't want to be associated with bombing of the capital of Beirut. But what there's such a concern, especially in this administration, of kind of, is there anything that's wanted beyond a culture of yes men, right? And so while Admiral Cooper is the head of CENTCOM, you have Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Dan Kane, who's also made similar comments previously about we need to restrict civilian casualties, it hurts us strategically. Are they either getting through to President Trump, or do they feel that they want to do that? Does that risk their own jobs, which has its own concerns?
Akbar, more evidence has emerged linking the United States to that missile attack last week on a girls' primary school in southern Iran that killed about 175 people, mainly girls. A New York Times analysis of missile fragments from the site resembles the markings of a U.S.-made Tomahawk cruise missile. Video also shows a Tomahawk hitting the area at the time of the attack. On Tuesday, a majority of Senate Democrats sent a letter to Hegseth calling for a swift investigation. During a news conference Monday, President Trump repeatedly claimed Iran had carried out the attack.
Tomahawk missile likely destroyed that Iranian girls' school. So will the Americans, will the U.S. accept any responsibility?
Well, I haven't seen it. And I will say that the Tomahawk, which is one of the most powerful weapons around, is used by, you know, is sold and used by other countries, you know that. And whether it's Iran, who also has some Tomahawks, I wish they had more, but whether it's Iran or somebody else, the fact that a Tomahawk is very generic, it's sold to other countries, but that's being investigated right now.
Mr. President, you just suggested that Iran somehow got its hands on a Tomahawk and bombed its own elementary school on the first day of the war. But you're the only person in your government saying this. Even your defense secretary wouldn't say that when he was asked, standing over your shoulder on your plane on Saturday. Why are you the only person saying this?
Because I just don't know enough about it. I think it's something that I was told is under investigation. But Tomahawks are used by others, as you know. Numerous other nations have Tomahawks. They buy them from us. But I will certainly, whatever the report shows, I'm willing to live with that report.
I'm willing to live with that report, Akbar Shahid Ahmed. Unfortunately, 175 people at least died, most of them girls, when the girls' primary school was struck. Can you explain what Trump is saying? He even said, I wish Iran had more Tomahawk missiles, and then just outright said, and he said it on the on Air Force One, that Iran did it. Even Hegseth, standing next to him, said there has to be an investigation.
It's absolutely surreal, Amy. And of course, the president has made this claim even before this. He's now made it repeatedly, and to extend it to suggesting that Iran has some of the most advanced U.S. weaponry, having been, as the administration likes to remind us, a U.S. enemy for 47 years at this point, it just beggars belief. And it also, of course, undermines trust that this investigation will be carried out in a kind of serious and credible way, or if it is, whether its results will ever be released. Will it be buried? Will it be dragged on? This is an administration, again, that in this sort of rule and also in a prior administration has pushed out independent inspectors general. They have pushed out government officials who have disagreed with their political preferences or suggested wrongdoing. So there is a pattern there of, are we actually having an honest discussion about the facts? I think it's an interesting one that gets to, are there splits within Trump's own circle? Because how far will someone like Hegseth go to kind of defend Trump here? And I think the president's willingness to kind of spin conspiracy theories about an attack that clearly killed people, where there are obvious bodies, there are obvious American missile fragments, at some point just saying things doesn't make it true, given clear evidence. Mm.
And before we go, the piece you wrote, Israel's applying Gaza logic to Lebanon with Trump's blessing. If you can talk more about this war on both fronts that Israel is conducting right now.
It's deeply worrying, Amy, for folks on the ground in Lebanon who I'm talking to regularly, and just looking at the strategic picture of it. Israel was in Lebanon 15 months ago, right? It said that it carried out bombing, it weakened Hezbollah to a huge degree, it reached an agreement, it was happy with.